So a couple of weeks ago, more or less, I received an email from a colleague. Her name is Tamar Weissman. She wrote a wonderful book on the 12 tribes. And she asked me some questions about this week's Parsha. And of course, obviously, you can't answer a month ago about this week's Parsha. I mean, you can answer, but it's not you're not emotionally involved in it at that point, right? It's just purely, right? It's purely intellectual. But when you get closer to it, then it changes. And during a class that I gave on Wednesday morning, I said some things which I realized were connected to her question. And then I said some more things yesterday in the afternoon when I gave another class, which were two different classes, by the way, on the Parsha. And then last night I decided that I'm going to use those two things and use her initial observation and then make this class. So that's why we changed at some point. So let's begin. This week is probably one of the most dramatic parshiot in the Torah. It's I don't know if it's hard to say favorites. This week it's my favorite. I mean, that's part of what I was saying before. I mean, each week you have a different favorite, but this week it's definitely my favorite. One of the reasons that Bahalotcha is so ingrained within me is I remember years and years ago when my father came back and on a Friday night he told us about a lecture that Rabbi Soloveitchik had given on this, which was really, in my mind, one of the most impressive classes that he had given. And I don't think we're going to get at all to that topic. We've discussed that before. But let's begin in chapter Perek Yud Aleph, which really is chapter 11. That's when they become spiritually bankrupt. That's when everything goes wrong. When there's a suggestion in the Gemara that there are actually seven books of the Torah, then the first three we know, Bereishit, Shemot, and Vayikra, and the third one is Bamidbar through almost till the end of chapter 10. And then there were, of course, those two psukim. I just said I wasn't going to talk about this. But then, beginning in Perek Yud Aleph to the end of Bamidbar is a different book, which means from Perek Aleph to Perek Yud, everything is positive, getting ready, we're going, destination is Israel, and then from Perek Yud Aleph, the destination is to walk in circles, and we never do then get where we think that we're going. So yeah, this is chapter 11, this is when everything goes wrong, this is the beginning. So the beginning, again, what looks like the beginning, because there may be a hint to the beginning beforehand, but the beginning of the problem start with Perek Yud Aleph, Pasuk Aleph, Vayihi am kimit onanim rabas ne Hashem, Vayishma Hashem, Vayicharapo, Vativ arbam eish Hashem, Vatochal bikzea machane. So you may or may not have noticed that God's name was written three times in that pasuk. What the people did, the people are complaining, and it's bad in God's ears, and God hears, and God is angry, and a fire burns. So what we would have expected, knowing how things have gone till now, that Moshe then should be the one who's the protector, right? Basically, we have a situation of God and Moshe playing good cop, bad cop, right? God is the bad cop and Moshe is the good cop, and Moshe then prays, and then God says, okay, you know, we'll work something out. Vayitzaka amel Moshe, so the people scream to Moshe, but by the way, you will realize it could have screamed to God. Vayitzaka ha'amel Moshe, v'tpalel Moshe el Hashem, v'tishka ha'esh. So everything till this point is as exactly how we would expect it. Now, what happens next is unclear, and this is what Charlotte was whispering to me before the class. The question comes up, is this one topic or two topics? Is this further detail into what just happened, or is this another problem? Va'asafsuf, which I always thought should be translated as the riffraff, and I actually just found an English translation that writes riffraff. Va'asafsuf, I mean, just because of the alliteration, obviously. V'asafsuf asher b'kirbo hitavu ta'ava. And the asafsuf who were within their midst felt some type of, or they experienced, or they lusted lust. Now, lusting is not good. Lusting lust is certainly not good. And what you realize over here is an interesting spiritual dynamic. And it's maybe the word spiritual is the wrong word, but what we're about to have is a spiritual devolution taking place. You know, as much as people like to point at various indications that we may have experienced some type of evolutionary process, which, as a parenthetical remark, essentially from a Jewish perspective, I don't care. I don't know if that's strong enough as a point. Okay, oh, shekeinu shelo. I mean, it really makes no difference. Of course, with, you know, one qualifying point, is a God who starts the process and God is involved in the process, which means if God uses an evolutionary process, it doesn't concern us one way or the other. But the other question is that ever since Sinai, have we been undergoing also a spiritual evolutionary process? Are we so much more improved now than we were in the past? Or perhaps there is a spiritual devolution which is taking place. And over here, we now watch the devolution, which is actually part of the issue. It starts with the edge of the camp, the Asaf Suf. It starts with these, again, the riffraff. And they have this ta'ava. So right there, we see this dynamic. It starts with one group, and then it goes over to the main group, the Bnei Yisrael. The question is how much further it goes, and what exactly is the problem. Who's going to give us meat? Now, the Chazal debate this point somewhat. Is it that they really want meat, or is this Lashon Nekia, which is interesting why people who are perhaps wicked, why they would use some other language, or it could be that they just feel they can't complain that much. But when it says basar, are they referring to sexual issues, or are they referring to culinary issues? So they then go on, and this sounds, and this is part of what's concerning, because it sounds like a disconnect. Because then they say, okay, we want meat. So then what would the next sentence be? If I were writing it, the next sentence would be, like roast beef and like rib steaks, right? Sizzling steaks, right? I mean, if you're ready, going to go there. Or perhaps a lamb stew. I mean, I can keep on going, and I'll stop. No? Lamb stew, no? Okay, not a lamb stew. We have a machloket over here. But that should be the next sentence. But then they say, one of the most absurd things I've ever seen in my life, Zacharnu et daga. Okay, remember fish. Okay, fish is not that bad. Asher nocha b'Mitzrayim chinam, which we ate in Egypt for free. Yeah, you were slaves. What do you mean you ate it for free? Et hakishuim. Okay, that's no one in the history of the world has ever lusted after squash. This has never happened. No. Lusted for squash? No. Okay, I can eat some. This has never ever happened. But especially with the starting point, they want meat, and then they start talking about the kishuim, et avatichim, and avatiach. It's not bad at all. But you skip the main course, you're going straight for dessert. So the whole thing is completely bizarre because they want meat and therefore they break it down into details. This should be, I mean, again, with all due respect, this should be steak and lamb chops. That should be the next. Or for you, it should be a braai. Okay. Now pasuk vav va'atanav shenu yivesha in kol. Bilti etaman inenu. Now the only thing which they have is this man, which apparently they're not all that excited about. That's all that we have. And then it gives a little description. Vaman kizera gad hu ve'eno ke'en abdolach shatua am v'laktu tachanu berechaim dachu b'medocha v'ashlu peru v'asu oto ugot v'yotamo ketam l'shad hashamen. Now, I want to pause a second. Because what happens over here is they're complaining about food, and they're complaining about the man, and they're complaining that they don't have meat, and they're complaining that they want other things. And I'll say it again, the whole thing is somewhat confusing. All of us were brought up with the wonderful rabbinic teaching, and it's someplace in our heads, although none of us have seen it inside, I suspect, or most of us. And the teaching is that the man tastes like anything that you wanted it to. So If the mun tasted like anything you wanted it to, so then what's going on? Second point, which is related to this point, is why now? which means they've been eating the mun, according to my calculation. If the cloud lifts in the second month, in the second year, on the 20th day, and the mun they started to eat in the second month on the 15th day of the first year, which means they've been eating the mun approximately for one whole year at this point. So this is the one-year anniversary, again, given a day or two, five if you want to bother me. Then they've been eating the mun for a little bit over a year. So why right now do we suddenly have this mun revolution? This is the second point. The next point, because I'm going to lose track how many points, but the next point is what's going to be the response that will take place. And the response, just like their complaint, is the most absurd thing that we can imagine. The response is equally unpredictable, that this is going to be, and of course you can tell me that either something profound happened here or this is the proverbial straw that broke the camel's back, but this seems to push Moshe over the edge, and let's continue and see what it says. And just, I do want to know, because I'll come back to it, where exactly do Chazal get this from, that the mun tasted like anything they want? But again, I'm asking why did that didn't work? It was actually a drasha on one of the words I just now read, but I'll come back to it soon. V'yishma Moshe pasuk yud. V'yishma Moshe ta'am bochel mishpachotav. That was one of the things the Gemara goes on. Oh, they're really claiming, they're complaining about family issues. And by the way, family issues will be, this is a little foreshadowing for everything else we're going to have today. They're complaining about the issues of family, which means which relationships are allowed or not allowed, which is why, again, Chazal can't imagine it's really about squash, right? Tell me it's about sex, maybe. Squash, can't be. So over here it says, Bochel mishpachotav ish lepetach o'alo, v'yichar af Hashem ma'od. So again, the normal thing, God is not pleased with this. Now we hear Moshe, this is bad. This is bad. Which means whatever we had before, this one is bad. Vayoma Moshe el Hashem. And now Moshe starts his soliloquy. Lama hariota la'avdecha, v'lama lo matzichein be'enecha, l'sum et masa kol ha'am hazeh alai. Why have you caused such, why don't you like me? Why have you done this to me? Why have you given me this burden? Why have you placed these people upon me? Ha'anochi hariti et kol ha'am hazeh? Was I pregnant with them? Im anochi yeladiti you? Did I give birth to them? Ki tomar elai se'eyu b'chekecha kasher yisau omein ata yanoik. When you're telling me I should carry them in a bosom the same way that a nursemaid would carry them, ela al ha'adama shenishba lavotav. Where am I going to get meat from? Because they're asking, give us meat that we can eat it. I cannot do this by myself. They're too heavy for me. And if this is how you're going to treat me, please shoot me. Right? Moshe is the one who coined that term. Please just kill me already. If you like me at all, please kill me. And, just don't let me continue like this. Now, I do want to point out that even if you're going to say that this is a metaphor and he doesn't really mean it, do we all recognize that it's a little dangerous to say to God, please kill me? Because God could respond, sure. Do you have any other wishes? Okay, two more left. Okay, what else? So, by the way, the other two may not be that meaningful once you're dead. So this whole response is something, again, completely extreme, and we are really, really somewhat at a loss to understand what it is that happened. In source number three is just a comparison when we got introduced to the mun the first time, which is actually quite important. Which part of the way of reconciling the description here versus there may be raw mun versus cooked mun, because especially over here, it spoke about all kinds of ways that you would prepare the mun. I mean, the mun, as far as I can tell, is, I mean, years ago I used to think that it was eggplant. You can make it taste like anything, but I think it's quinoa now. I think that that's what it looks like. Also has no taste by itself. Tofu. Quinoa, there we go. Quinoa is, there you go. And I understand the complaints completely. So let's... So I want to skip source 3 for a moment. Source 4 is the continuation in the Chumash. So God has... See, Moshe said two things. One, Moshe said, I can't do this by myself. Please kill me. So those are two things. God responds, and the question is going to be, does he respond to both of them or respond to one of them? So he certainly responds, what was the order that he gave, that Moshe said this in? First he said, I can't do this. It's too heavy for me. Then he says, please kill me. So God responds certainly to the first one first, and he says in source number 4, which is simply the continuation, Vayomer Shema Moshe, Asfali Shivim Ish, Mizikne Yisrael, Asher Yadata, Kihem Zikne Ya'am, Vishotra, Velakachta Otam, Elo Omoed, Vityatsu Sham Imam. Essentially, God's response is going to be, okay, you need help. You can't do this by yourself. Let me get some people. Now, can we make an observation? There are a great deal of similarities. When I say similarities, I'm not saying it's the same, right? And you'll say, then why are you using the word similarities? There's a great deal of, there's many themes which are mentioned in this week's parsha, which were mentioned at an earlier place. The earlier place is going to be moving from Bishalach into Yitro, right? Compared to themes that we have over here. Now, some of it, when I talk about the themes, are going to be the inverse, and some of them are going to be exactly the same. Which means in Bishalach is where we're introduced to the Mun, and we just now saw the description over here. We're introduced to the Mun for a second time. The first time they got the Mun, they sound pretty happy about it. Wow, we have no food, and at least we got some Mun. And now, again, a year has gone by. All that we have is the Mun. So, so okay, so now that goes back, which is more of a question on Chazal than is a question on the Chumash, because Chazal insists it could taste like anything that you want, so then why are they complaining? Because it could taste like anything that they want. Now, the other thing is that, again, maybe we're not paying attention to, but I want to put all this out, and then hopefully we'll see some of it inside. Something else happens in Parshat Yitro. One is they arrive by Har Sinai. Something happened in Parshat Balotcha. They leave Har Sinai, which means when I say the similarities and themes, in this case, it's the inverse. It's arriving and then leaving. Okay, so you have the Mun in both places, over here arriving and leaving. You have another thing which maybe we didn't notice along the way in Yitro, which is one of the reasons it's called Yitro, is Yitro arrives. Over here, Moshe turns to either the same person, because it's called Chovav Ben Reuel, and he says, come. And he says, no. So over there you have Yitro joining, and over here you have him or somebody who represents him leaving. So I'm going to say it again. We get at Har Sinai, Yitro arrives, we leave Har Sinai, and Chovav ben Reuel leaves. So again, when I said that there's similarities, I didn't mean to say that it's the same thing, but what I did mean to say is that there are connections taking place. The other thing is, what exactly did Yitro say after they had their party? What does he say to Moshe? You can't do this all alone, right? And so what is Moshe now saying? Oh, I really can't do this all alone. By the way, maybe part of what has pushed Moshe over the limit is something that you didn't think. Maybe it's not the people at all. Maybe it's the fact that Yitro just left. Yitro was the guy who's been looking out for him. If Moshe did have an advisor, somebody who's looking out for him, and maybe for selfish reasons, because this is his family, this is, right? Right. And so again, the other thing which is interesting is that not only does Yitro arrive, somebody else arrives with him. Who's that? Tzipora. So now you have Moshe and Tzipora being united. What do you have at the end of the parasha? At the end of the parasha, Tzipora is speaking in the way that Rashi and Chazal understand it, because they've separated. So I'm going to say it again, that the more you look at what's taking place in Balotcha, you realize it's not just what I call this devolution in terms of the people's spirituality. There is this unraveling taking place of all kinds of issues that we thought we understood and were established back there in Shemot. So now, having said all that, I want to note something, and then it's again to contrast with something in Yitro. Let's take a look. Because the issue really is, what did Yitro suggest, and what was implemented, versus what is God's response over here? Because there's something over here in God's response which I think is a little unexpected. If we'll just think through, or if you want, we can look at the Yitro discussion. It's source number 5. In the Yitro discussion, it's Moshe says it's to judge the people. Now, especially if Yitro is Kohen Midyon, who he is, so he's a professional. He knows what it's like to community, to have people who look to him as their cleric. He knows that you need sometimes an assistant rabbi, or you need something else to help you out. You can't do all of this by yourself. People come to me for spiritual reasons. And then he explains, and it's interesting, they come to search for God, but then he goes specifically in terms of a judicial issue. When there are issues coming up, then I have to act in a judiciary fashion. So, it's not good. It's going to be bad for you and for them. You can't do this by yourself. Now, isn't that interesting? Because that's exactly what we're coming back over here. When Moshe goes, that goes, I can't do this by myself. Which then, of course, raises the question, so what happened? Now, if we'll note over here what his response is, he goes, listen to me, I'm going to tell you what to do. I guess in today's world, like 2 out of 3 ain't bad, right? Okay, we'll leave that. V'samta aleihem sarei alafim v'sarei ma'ot sarei chamishim v'sarei asarot v'shavtu ata'am. By the way, do you like the people who were chosen and why they're chosen? Pasuk Bet, Moshe listens. Vayivchar Moshe anshei chayil mikol Yisrael v'yitein otam roshim alam. Sarei alafim, sarei mayot, sarei chamishim, sarei asarot. V'shavtu otam. And anything that was really big came to Moshe. Now, what's missing over here? First of all, it says nothing about 70. It just says, I mean, you could do the math to figure out how many they actually had, but that doesn't interest me. It doesn't talk about 70, but there's something else which is over here. The people that were chosen here were chosen for particular qualities, and of course you can compare what Yitro advises and what Moshe implements. Maybe they couldn't not actually find people with all of those skills, but that doesn't concern me. What concerns me is that the task at hand is one which is the judiciary. It's judges and people to be involved in solving problems. You want to call them mediators, judges, that does not concern me either. But there's one particular skill which is not here, where if you do compare it to God's response in source number 4, the continuation of Perek Yud Aleph, let's take a look what God is looking for. Again, this is not Yitro speaking now. This is now, he talks about, let's look. So far, what are the qualities? Elders. Elders. Vishotrav, whatever Shotrav means. Now, this is also quite strange. I will come and speak to you. That, by the way, that should remind us of something. And when I come and speak to you, some of the magic dust which is going to come on you is then going to be sprinkled on them as well. Notice, if you want to eat meat, then you need to become holy to eat meat. It's very interesting because it's not the same as lust. Because you comply. So it goes into this whole then discussion about the food and so on, which I want to skip. He gathers 70. These people all started to prophesy. Now that's the issue. Prophecy was introduced over here. Those that helped Moshe back in Yitro, there was no prophecy that took place. And my question over here is, so why exactly is prophecy part of the resolution? Why is it that these people need the ability to be able to prophesize in order to be able to help Moshe? And why is, and by the way, don't make a mistake about it. The issue of prophecy will then continue till the end of the parsha as the issue, which means then we're going to have an extra two people are going to prophesize, and that's going to be Eldad and Medad, which I'm going to come back to. And then we're going to have Miriam coming and saying to Aaron, hold it, we're also prophets. But let's just take a look for a second, and then I'm going to, you know, try to again identify what's going on over here. In Pasuk Avav, Aru Shnei Anashim B'machane, Shem Achad Eldad V'Shem Hasheni Medad, V'Tanach Aleim Aruch V'Hem B'Ketuvim V'Lo Yitzu O'Olav Yitnabu B'machane. And then an extra two people, aside from the 70, they're prophesizing as well. V'Yirat Tanav V'Yed L'Moshe V'Yomar Eldad Medad Mitnabim B'machane. And they come over running and saying, Eldad and Medad are prophesizing. V'Yan Yeshua Ben Nun M'Sheret Moshe M'Buchura V'Yomar Adini Moshe Kila'em. Arrest them. Put them in prison. Put them in bakele. Put them in prison. Arrest them. And Moshe's response is that everybody should be able to prophesize. We're skipping. So they're not part of the 70. They're 70 plus these two. So all that I'm pointing out right now is, I have a problem. The people are lusting. The people are lusting, and maybe it's because of relationships, and maybe it's because of food. They talk about meat, and they move over to vegetables. They complain about the mun. Why didn't the mun taste like anything that we wanted it to? Moshe pushes them over the top. Moshe says, I can't do this. Please kill me. God says, fine, brings people to help him, but the people that help him now need the ability to prophesize, and then prophesizing starts to spread. Others are prophesizing. People stop them, and Moshe says, I wish everybody would prophesize. And then at the end, we have this issue about Miriam says to Aaron, we also are prophets, and God says, you think you're prophets? You're not prophets. Moshe is the real prophet. And so I'm just saying is that somehow this whole thing became a referendum about prophecy. Why? Some reason prophecy is part of the resolution. Why? Because the last thing we knew is that we were just now talking about food. So how does food get to prophecy? So that's really what I'm pointing out. Yeah, correct. So I'm going to point it out again. The only hint that we have is the resolution. So somehow the resolution has to be part of the problem which had taken place. And I think I've spelled out what exactly is the concern, is that we see a problem, because normally when you see a problem, then you understand the resolution. I understand why the Slav is the resolution. I understand other parts. I'm just questioning if Moshe needs help. So what happened to the others? And what are these in contrast? And why did we just, I'm going to say it again, why did we just now shift to Nevuah? Now there's another thing that I want to point out. Moshe, when he complained, went into a metaphor. Right? He went into a metaphor. His metaphor is, am I their mother? Right? Was I pregnant with them? Did I give birth to them? Am I their nurse? The whole metaphor was an interesting metaphor. But that, again, that's not a commentary. That's not a Rishon. That's not a Medrash. That's Moshe using this metaphor. So that itself also we need to wonder, why did Moshe use at this particular point this particular metaphor, and what has pushed him in this direction? With all that, I want to now go to the Gemara. Now, I always wonder, and I always know the answer, by the way. I always wonder when there's something that all of us know, like it's like a midrash or a rabbinic read or a rabbinic understanding or a rabbinic insight. We all know it, but we never know where they got it from or where it's written. So I always have suspicions about these things. Sometimes the reason is going to be because it's really not as old as we think it is, and it's going to be much more recent, like just for example, that the Jews were saved because of three things. Right, so you go try and find the midrash that says that exact thing, and the main thing always is the clothing. So the midrash never talked about the clothing, but I do imagine that many people in more modern times that became the main issue about the Jews trying to be different from others. So that became a very important part of the teaching and was repeated time and time again. But In this particular case, it's going to be the other suspicion that it simply could be that it was inappropriate. But by the way, there's another reason. When there are teachings that are not found in Rashi, then already we tend not to know where they are. Rashi is the wonderful conduit that brought ideas down. But then there's always this other issue that maybe the way that Chazal phrase it makes it inappropriate to actually quote. So let's take a look and see what it is that Chazal were noticing. And we are in the Gemara in Yoma and Daf Ayin Hay in source number 3. This whole page in Yoma deals with this perek. So if you want, and I skipped a lot of it, but if you do want to have much more of rabbinic insight what took place, that's the daf to learn. It starts a little bit from the previous page, from Ayin Dalem at Bet. Source number 3 is Acharno to the Gashen Ochabim Mitzrayim, who Rav Shmuel. Argument in Bavel, first generation of Amorayim. Chadamar Dagim, the Chadamar Arayot. So right there we already see, what are they? One of them says, what are they complaining about? It's fish, and says, no. All of this is a pretext. There's really something else bothering him. Mandu amadagim dichtiv nochal, mandu im arayot dichtiv chinam. Okay, skipping along the way. Bishlam lamandu amar arayot, haine dichtiv yishmah shata am bochim lemishpachotav, al iske mishpachotav. Thing having to do with the relationship. Shina asru lehem lishkav itzlam. Now there became all kinds of people that they can't sleep with. And that's what bothered them. El lamandu amar dagim, mai bochel mishpachotav, havaha havebo, so now we have an argument between two Amorayim in they came to Eretz Yisrael. Chad amar kol aminim kulam ta'amu baman ta'aman. One said that the man tastes like anything that they wanted. Except for those five things. So they found the five things that man didn't taste like, and that's why they're complaining. By the way, even if that's the case, then it would have tasted like meat. The Chadamar, the other one says, Kol aminim kolam tamuta man umamashan. It tastes like everything and had the same texture, umamashan. Not only did it taste like it, it even had the same texture, voton chamesh aminim ta'aman velo mamashan. But when it came to those five things, it had the taste, but not the texture. Wonderful. They got kishuim, but they didn't have the texture of kishuim. Okay, I'm not even going there. We'll skip a little bit. I'm Rabbi Yehuda Maravi, Timur of Chamer, Rabbi Chanin, Malamit Sheyorod Lam Yisrael Aman, Tachshitei Nashim. Brothers, this has nothing to do with what I'm talking about today, but over here there's a number of things. It says that the man provided all your needs. Not only did it give you food, it also jewelry. It was a jewelry store. It says the jewelry would come down as well, and right, tachshitei nashim. So not only did they get food, they also got, okay, I'll pick out one of those today and bring them over. Vayatamo kitam l'shad hashamin. So the taste was like Lashad Hashaman Amar Rabbi Abo, Al Tikri Lishad Ela Shad. So what the Gemara just now did is it's, and by the way, this is the reason we don't know the teaching, it says it's like a breast. Mashad ze mitapech lakama gvanim, afhaman mitapech lakama ta'amim. So this is where it learns that the man had all kinds of taste. Ika da amri shad mamash, mashad ze kol zman shetinok mimashmesh bo motzi bo kama ta'amim, afaman kol zman shisrael ochlim oto motzi bo kama ta'amim. So I want to pause here for a second. This teaching about the man somehow being connected to, it's the image that it's telling us is, what is the man? The man is God's way of feeding his children, or the infants, and the way that God is feeding the infants is this very, very tender image of the mother holding the child and nursing him and then giving all of their needs. And just as mother's milk is very, very healthy and has all kinds of antibodies and is all that the child needs at a certain age, here we have our very, very young Am Yisrael. All their needs are taken care of as God is tenderly holding the Jewish people and feeding them. But then something goes wrong. That's what we need to understand. Something goes wrong, which is our question mark. And now Moshe comes and says, hold it. Am I their mother? Am I the one who's been feeding them? Am I the one who's supposed to do this? So therefore, according to this, the complaint then is going right back to God. So, you know, like, what has happened over here? Which means, why is this on me? But what I want to point out is what this Gemara very cleverly did. It's not just a one-word thing. What it just now did is it just now entered into the whole theme of Moshe's response, And again, the Gemara didn't say this. The Gemara obviously leaves some room for me to say something, and I think I'm correct about this, is that what the Gemara is doing is it's showing how Moshe now fits into this as far as Moshe now being this replacement wet nurse, as it were. And by the way, those are not my words. Who's the one who used those words? Moshe used those words. So now you realize what Chazal are saying, but the man initially was something else, and again, something here has gone wrong. So now all that we have to figure out is what has gone wrong, and I want to add the one more other piece of information that we still have, and what's that? And that is that for some reason the prophecy is connected to all of this as far as the resolution goes, so then apparently prophecy is exactly what our problem is. So let me just go a little bit further, and I hope I will be a lot clearer. First hint to us that something here has gone terribly wrong when it says hitavu ta'ava. Ta'ava is never a good thing. Where was the first time that we had ta'ava? So you all know we have to go back there. And in Bereishit Perek Gimel, it talks about that Eve sees the tree, v'chi ta'ava hu le'inayim. Now, what happens then is when she gives into ta'ava, some kind of level of spirituality is lost. She loses her innocence. She realizes that she's naked, and something has changed, which means the taking in of the ta'ava, which is represented by food, which is very interesting because over here, again, we're talking about food. So, and now you understand why Chazal may be saying that, no, that, by the way, both cases are really talking about sex and not about food because of the word ta'ava. But in both of the situations, there is ta'ava and there is some kind of food, and maybe there is a loss of innocence in both cases over here as far as something which has happened. The other thing I want to remind you of is source number 7. Source number 7 is in Dvarim, minding its own business there, where it says, Ki archiv Hashem alakechad gvulcha ka'asher diber lach b'marta ochla basar ki ta'ava nafshecha lacho basar. When the day comes that you're going to want to, but it says, your borders will spread and you're going to want to eat meat, but not just want to eat meat. What is the word over here? Ki ta'ave nafshecha lacho basar, b'cholavat nafshecha tocho basar. Right? You can eat to your heart's desire. That the day will come that you want to eat, go ahead. You can eat meat in all of your inhabitations. What is it saying here? Let's let Rashi help us. Source 8, Ki Archiv. We'll skip that. Kol avat nafshecha. Aval b'midbar ne'asa lahem basar chulin elim kein makdisha u'makriva shlamim. I think it's missing a letter. What is it that Rashi said? In the desert, they were allowed to bring a korban. They can bring a korban shlamim. They can walk into the beit into the mishkan, bring a korban shlamim, and eat meat. So when the people are complaining that they don't have meat to eat. So again, there could be two possibilities. One is just they don't have cows, they don't have meat, they don't have lamb, they just don't have enough things. But it's not that there was no ability. They could eat it, but if they ate it, it had to be kudshim. It had to be something which is a korban. It had to be holy. So now the question here, are they simply complaining that we don't have enough food, or are they saying that we don't want something which is holy? Do you remember? I read it real quickly. When God says, I'm going to send the birds down, he says, hitkadshu, make yourselves holy. So maybe that's part of the complaint, is that they don't want that kind of holiness. Let's go back to the context, and then again, I think that we'll be better equipped to understand what exactly has happened now. As I said, back in Parshat Yitro, they arrived at Har Sinai. What happens at Sinai? At Sinai, all of them achieve a level of prophecy. They may not be happy about this, because when they can all prophesize and God speaks to them, they recoil, they move away, they don't want it, they run away, they said, speak to Moshe. And now finally they leave Sinai. So when they leave Sinai, of course the question becomes, so how exactly do you walk away from Sinai? So the Ramban, and he's going to say similar things twice. First the Ramban is on Vayehi ben Soha Aharon, which goes back to these two verses with the nuns, which we've spoken about in the past. But immediately prior to that, is just to understand the sequence. We have Moshe speaking to Chaver ben Ruel. We have then the cloud lifts and they travel, which means after having arrived at Har Sinai, Rosh Chodesh Sivan, year number one. So now, in the second month, in the 20th day, in year number two, the cloud lifts and they go. So they've been here almost for a year. How do you walk away from Har Sinai? So it could be that you take three steps back. It could be, how do you walk away from Sinai? So here the Ramban quotes a midrash. As far as I recall, we don't know where this midrash is. Tosfot quotes it as well in the Gemara, but look at the end, on the top of page 3, second paragraph from the top, Aval inyana midrash hazeh matzu oto ba'agada, shenasu mehar Sinai bisimcha. My recollection is that Tosfot does not have the word simcha, that leaving Sinai generated joy, kitino kaborech mebeit ha-sefer. It's simcha is what's added here, is that they leave like a child running away from school. But by the way, that's not enough. The Ramban doesn't stop there. Amru shema yarbev yiten lanu mitzvot, because they may give us more. You know, they got there, it was 10. And somehow they negotiated, they're up to 613 and counting. And, you know, let us, you know, the second that cloud lifts, they turn around and run away from there like banshees. You know, we got to get away from this. So they leave b'simcha that they're not going to have any more holiness. Now, this is what I intimated before. I said that the problem started in chapter 11, but actually this is the very end of chapter 10. And this may be already the foreshadowing or the problem that will take place. The Ramban says it again in Perek Yud Aleph. He says, mit onanim, which means the problem over here is this lack of spirituality which is taking place, and they're being involved in all of the physical. And I'm going to say it again, this is the other side of the coin of the previous comment of the Ramban, is that they leave this place of holiness bisimcha. There's a Sforno which I am very fond of. He reads something in Korach a little differently than we normally read it, but I think it's this exact idea. Source 11, Vayikhalu al Moshe v'al Aron, Vayomur leim rav lachem ki kol ha'eda kulam kedoshim v'tocham Hashem. But everybody is holy. All the community is holy. So how do we always understand that? That Korach is saying that everybody is holy. Why are you placing yourself above others? Listen to the way the Sforno says it. Kulam kedoshim, everyone's holy. Mikaf regel va'ad harosh, from our feet to our heads, we're all holy. Which means this is a complaint. The complaint of Korach is, according to the Sforno, why have you given us so much holiness? Why is it that from our feet to our heads, why do we need to know, to be an Orthodox Jew, you need to know how to put your shoes on in the morning? There's a legend, which by the way may be true, or at least the elements may be true, that there were some rabbis who sent emissaries, this part is true by the way, sent emissaries from Europe to go and see Shabtai Tzvi and to observe him, and to see if they think that. So according to the legend, and I'll say that the legend may not be accurate, is that they watched him put his shoes on, and he didn't put his right shoe on, then his left shoe on, then tie the left shoe, and then tie the right shoe, and then they realized that he is not really a Mashiach. But the legend is not so far from the truth. As I said, there is historical evidence of that. They did send people to watch him and observe him, and they said that his orientation towards halacha is wanting, and he's not careful on certainly rabbinic laws, and therefore it's quite unlikely that he is who he claims to be. But over here, the complaint of the Sforno, or the complaint of Korach, and through the way the Sforno understands it, is that there's too much holiness, there's too much laws, to stop it already. I mean, every single thing we need to be careful about how we do it, and that's the complaint. And again, that can be the complaint of these people over here, there's too much holiness. Now, I want to go back a little bit further now and put a couple of more things together. First, I want to suggest the following. And it could well be, I was thinking about it this morning, it could be that my whole orientation for what I'm about to say has been impacted by a wonderful movie called Hook with the incomparable Robin Williams, Dustin Hoffman, and others, where in the interpretation of Peter Pan, where the important thing is that you have to think pleasant thoughts, and when you think pleasant thoughts, then suddenly the food changes, right? It was something which was inedible, and now you think, and now you see all of these great foods. And I think that's the most wonderful interpretation of the Mun, that you need to be on a certain level in order for the food to be able to be transformed, which means if there is a lack of holiness, I'm going to say it again now, I'm going to use the word prophecy, but I'm overstating it. I just want you to know that I'm overstating it. But the prophecy is part of the solution. But if there is this lack of holiness, now again, at Har Sinai, they were all prophets. At Har Sinai, they all were able to have this higher level. At Har Sinai, there's no question that they're able to look at things which are holy coming from heaven or in the image of the Midrash to be held by God and to be nursed by God and to have that connection, and the food is very holy. But when you don't feel that connection, you don't feel God holding you, you don't feel God taking care of you, then you're just eating mun, and suddenly without the imagination or without the prophecy or without the holiness, however you want to interpret this, now there's something which is missing, which is exactly why the solution over here is Moshe says, I can't do this because ultimately I am not God, and they need this connection. And God's response really is that you do have the ability of doing this and of connecting other people to spirituality. And this is why the complaint over here is very, very different than it was back over there, because that was basically judicial issues, and it was not as overtly spiritual as it is over here. But therefore, the resolution is going to need to be this resolution of more and more people of having prophecy, which of course has this funny response. On the one hand, the Na'ar is maybe one of Moshe's sons, is going to come and yell, hold it, what's going on over here, and tell Moshe, or Yeshua is going to say, stop him, arrest him, and Moshe's response is, but everybody should have prophecy. Why is that Moshe's response? Everybody should have holiness. Because this is exactly the issue. It's the lack of everybody feeling holiness is what has created this problem. And that's what Moshe feels overwhelming. How do I have enough holiness to sustain all of these people? Now that question goes, maybe Moshe does, maybe Moshe doesn't. When I get to the end of the parasha, what does God say? Oh, we're also prophets. No, you're not prophets like Moshe. That means Moshe's holiness really is quite different. But now I want to go back to something which I sort of skipped over, and it is actually a little scary, but it's maybe this other side of prophecy. There were two people in the camp, and they continued to prophesize. So, right? So, who are the two people? Eldad and Medad. So what do Eldad and Medad say? So first look at the Gemara in Source 13, Gemara in Sanhedrin, Daf Yud Zayin. Rabbi Shimon Omer Menachem and Ishtayru B'shosh She'omer Lo Kodesh Baruch Hu Moshe Esfadli Shavim Ish Omer Eldad Omedad Einonu Ru'uyim Lo To Gdula. First thing that we learn about Eldad and Medad, we're going to learn a lot more, or as much time as we have. First thing we learn about them is they're very modest. By the way, does that remind you of anybody? Right? Who are we? Right? We're inadequate. We don't deserve this. We don't deserve to be among the seven. Einonu Ru'uyim Lo To Gdula. Which should remind us exactly of Moshe, which, by the way, therefore makes them the perfect help for Moshe or replacement for Moshe. And that itself is a little scary. Amar Kodesh Baruch Hu, Hoil Ma'atatem Atzmachem Hareini Mosif Gdula Gdulatchem. Because you've diminished yourselves, I'm going to make you even greater. Ma Gdula Osif Lehem, Shenevim Kulun Nidmu Pasku. All the others prophesized, but then stopped, the other 70. Vehem nitba'u v'lo pasku. And they continued to prophesy. Umanu v'wa nitba'u. But what prophecy did they have? Amru, they said, Moshe met, Yeshua machnis et Yisrael la'aretz. Their prophecy was that Moshe is going to die and that Yeshua is going to carry them through. Now, when I thought about this yesterday, it occurred to me that this is the... First of all, I can just say independent prophecy, or I can say this is the second half of what Moshe requested coming true. Moshe said, I can't do this by myself. We'll get you help. Please kill me. God says, okay. Which means, is that possibly what took place? Of course, I looked for someone to say this because, you know, you can't say those things by yourself. And lo and behold, it's a Beferish Zohar, black and white. in source number 14, Amar of Yitzchak, Maishna de Moshe, de Mila da, Le'ila kenukva, dechtiv. It goes into Moshe's describing himself in the feminine over here, Moshe as the mother, Moshe as the one who's pregnant, Moshe as the one who gives birth, Moshe as the nurse. Dechtiv, im kacha at oseli, at atame boile. Elal atar demuta sharei beik ha'amar v'hu atar denukva iyu begin kach amar genin aharog v'da ilana demuta. It's the tree of death, by the way, which takes us right back to that other place of lust and so on. V'ha ukmina debi ilana dechai lo sharei beimuta v'da hadr le'gabi ilana demuta. And we'll skip to the next paragraph. Miyad v'yomar shema Moshe esfali shivim ish amar le'kud shabrichu at boi muta b'choz mina. You keep talking about death. Hare lach v'atzalti min haruach. You're going to give up some of your power. Tachazi, come and see. Dahacha yada Moshe di'iu yamut v'lo ye'el la'ara. He knew he's going to die now and not into land. Daha el dadu meidad mila da have amri. That's what they spoke about. Al da lo boi le'inish b'shat derugza sharibe le'laita garme. Daha kama kaimi alei demakabal hi mila. But basically, that God accepted Moshe's words. Bizimna achruna de barmita lo kabli mine. Begin the kula, and so on and so forth. So essentially, it over here gets to the last line. Va'alda ishtaru levatar el donamed v'amur da de Moshe kanesh v'yeshua yeolon l'yisrael ara. Essentially saying that Moshe said, please kill me, and therefore el donamed that prophesies Moshe is going to die. But the Shlosh says the same thing over. He quotes the Zohar and says it more so in Hebrew, so I apologize for doing it in the Zohar, which is a little more authentic in the Aramaic. But I do want to point out a little bit more about this. Do you notice anything about the names Eldad and Medad? Dad. What's a dad? It's not just breast, it's even more, it's a nipple. So, Eldad and Medad is just the continuation of everything that we've noticed till now. Because Eldad and Medad get the prophecy, and they're now somehow a replacement of Moshe, who uses the image of the nurse, but the image of the nurse is understood immediately afterwards in terms of the issue of prophecy. So Eldad and Medad are then going to prophesize, but of course they see themselves as being somewhat inferior. I look at source number 16, because this will be a little surprising. Im tomar mi heim elu, kabola biyad hanavim arishonim. Who are these people? So the Toldot Yitzchak writes that we have a tradition. Ki Eldad and Medad hayu achei Moshe min ha'av. Shayoda Amram Mimosha Isur Arayo Chatida Torah La Asartam Upirish Miochevid Dodato. So here it's going after the word Dodato, because we're told that Amram married his Dod. Vlakach Isha Acheret Vahulid Elu. And that's why it's Eldad Umedad, not the Dod, a different mother. So it's Moshe's brother from the same father, from a different mother, and it's connecting over here. So over here we're focusing on revealed Torah. We'll get to the Arizal in a second. But first I do want to tell you about a tradition which is found in the Targum Yonatan. The Targum Yonatan says the exact opposite. It says that when Moshe's father, you don't have it, it's Targum Yonatan and Perikid Aleph Pesach Kavav, it says that when I'll read the Targum Yonatan, pseudo Yonatan in Hebrew. V'nisharu shnei nashim b'machaneh, shmo shel achad Eldad, shmo shel shnei Medad, banav shel El Tzafan ben Farnach. That's their father. Sheyoldu lo Yocheved bat Levi bizman shir garsha Amram ba'ala v'nasalo ad shel yodat Moshe. That when Amram divorced his wife, she married somebody else. Some of you may be a little concerned about Machzir Grushato over here. But the Targum Yonatan said, by the way, both traditions have Eldad and Medad as brothers of Moshe, which half-brothers of Moshe, okay, half-brothers. One tradition has from the father, other tradition has it from the mother. Look at back 16, third line from the middle line, third line from the bottom or the top, and the source 16 at the end. Vizeu Eldad, Pirish Einbo Isur, Rechihido Dato, Kach Medad, Vachain Isur Dad, Yesh Bizeh. So Dod is from the word uncle or aunt. For Amru Kid Shalach Rab Hillel, Shahayimi Eretz Yisrael, Katav the Rav Amram. So I love the fact that there's some Rav Amram in this whole story. Shara Kivram, and he saw the graves of Eldad and Medad. So what did it say in their graves? That's what it says. They found their graves. That's what it says on the graves. By the way, you know that what it says on a grave all depends on when the grave was written. It doesn't necessarily tell you what the reality is, but at least there is this interesting tradition. When we finally go down the source 18 to the Arizal, just one more second, go down to the Arizal. And I'll skip a little bit. Right. That Eldad and Medad represents the two breasts, as it were. Achad yamin v'achad shmol. Right and left. Shema Malay Shahu Chesed Nirmaz Bedad Echad Yemini Shahu Eldad Ushnei Otiyot Mi, right? Me Dad Mi, what's Mem and Yud? Mem and Yud is 40 and 10 is 50, which it's going to connect to the Nun Shehem Chamishim Sharibina, which is the 50 Sharibina, which, by the way, the Kabbalistic understanding of all this connects it to the two Nuns. It connects it to the two psukim written within the nuns, and that the prophecy, the two nuns, and therefore the prophecy of Eldad and Medad, which has to do with the 50th of Sharibina, is found within those two nuns, within those psukim of the book which was hidden in the book which was taken away. But I want to pause now and just go back, because we may have gone a little too far. But let's go back and try to understand what we just now saw. I laid out a very simple problem, which, by the way, may not be a real problem. The question why the food didn't taste like it was supposed to taste is not a question on the Chumash, it's a question on the Gemara. The Chumash never told us that the man was supposed to taste in a particular way. And actually, the Chumash in two different places tells us two different things. If you want, you can infer that if food comes from heaven and God gives us this food, then this food should be some kind of perfect food. But the Gemara was interesting, because the Gemara is what noticed one word in our parsha, Lashed, and said that, no, this is really Shad, and therefore the food which was given to the people is really this metaphor, this image of God nursing the Jewish people and giving them some kind of perfect food, and therefore the perfect food theoretically should be perfect for us in terms of taste as well, and that's actually the continuation of the Gemara. The reason the Gemara was so interesting is what I've already said to you. The reason the Gemara is so interesting is because then Moshe uses that same kind of metaphor. And Moshe uses the same kind of metaphor in terms of what his role is. So that was one piece of information. The other piece of information is, therefore, the resolution becomes one of prophecy. So why is the resolution one of prophecy? That we need more spirituality in the camp. So apparently the problem is a lack of spirituality. Where does the lack of spirituality seem to come from? It seems to come from the way that they leave Har Sinai. They leave Har Sinai and they don't want that kind of spirituality, which, as I said, will later on be echoed by Korach and his complaints as well, is that it's too much spirituality, too many laws, too many things, and therefore, as the Ramban says, they ran away b'simcha and joy, the bell rang, and it's as if the teacher said, for tomorrow, I was about to teach you another law, and they don't want to hear anymore, and that's how they leave. So therefore, now, being in this situation of having left Har Sinai and not wanting the spirituality, so now what's going to happen to the food that they eat, which is spiritual food? Yes, there's a physical form to the man, but it's spiritual food. It's food which God is holding you and nursing you. So now, if you've rejected God nursing you, you've rejected this spiritual construct, so what is this food going to taste like? And so that may be exactly what Chazal are trying to tell us. At that point, it doesn't taste good. And Moshe is standing there and say, okay, Am I the nurse? Because Moshe understands the inner meaning of this. Again, exactly consistent with the Gemara. Which becomes interesting then is specifically the names of Eldad and Medad, which as far as I can tell, the first to really connect it to all of this, what it was the Arizal, who sees them as simply the continuation. The scary part over here is that Moshe made two requests. One is, one was a statement of his request, I can't do this, and therefore kill me. And then we may very well find that God says, okay, let me find people to help you. But the help over here is not the same as before. And again, everything that we learn in this week's parasha is connected to the issues of Bishalach and Yitro, but it's almost like the inverse. Then we get to Sinai, and now we move away from Sinai. So over here, the whole issue of prophecy and spirituality, I'm a little afraid exactly how to nuance this. Was it really that the whole people were supposed to retain prophecy forever? Well, yeah, there's at least one person who says, I wish. And who's that? That's Moshe, I wish. But nonetheless, even though Moshe wishes everyone would have it, what does God then let on? What does he tell Miriam and Aaron at the end? Yeah, everybody can have prophecy, but everybody having prophecy is not going to be the same as Moshe Rabbeinu. But the only two who may even get close, and this is what's strange, the only two who get close, according to the Gemara, the ones who start but don't stop, because they have the humility, is Eldad and Medad, who then may very well serve as this kind of conduit, even the breast, if you will, which Moshe says, I can't do, so it's so interesting they continue. But then we look at the prophecy that they're said to have said, and what's that? Well, Moshe's going to die, but that's exactly what Moshe requested. So their prophecy is an understanding of Moshe. So then Chazal are now stuck. How can two people have such understanding? Where do they come from? So then what's the resolution? What's the answer? So they must be from the same spiritual DNA as Moshe. They must be coming from the same place because they seem to be having very similar capabilities. So therefore, the reasons why nobody ever taught this in elementary school or high school, I think you now understand, is that if you try to clean this up a little bit, so then you're left with, well, the month tasted like anything you wanted it to. Let's move on to the next to the next topic. But the reason that it tasted like anything went, as far as the Midrash or the Gemara is concerned, the truth is that it's so tender and it is so spiritual, and that seems to be exactly what the people ran away from, and that's where Moshe feels overwhelmed. How can I possibly do this? And as I pointed out, maybe he's being overwhelmed is that suddenly the guy who had his back the whole time, which was Yitro, is no longer going to be with him, and now Moshe feels very, very alone, and that itself is part of the tragedy. Aaron seems to be silent all the way through. Even later on, Aaron seems to be much more silent. The thing about Aaron, and this is actually, I'm going to touch what I didn't speak about. What I was going to speak about is actually the last pasuk of last week's parsha, where it's between the Nisim and between the lighting of the candles. There's one pasuk that God came and spoke a love, but only to Moshe, which means Moshe is the only one who has this direct prophecy, and Aaron is not on that level, which means even according to the way that Rashi and others explain it, it's based on the Midrash, that God speaks with a loud voice in the Mishkan. It comes down through the Kruvim, it comes down in a loud voice, but nobody hears it. Which means the miracle then is that God takes away the hearing of everybody else. The only one who can hear it is Moshe, because Moshe is the only one on the level of really being able to hear Bein Shnei HaKruvim, to be able to hear the sound that God is speaking. Aaron doesn't hear it. So therefore, Aaron's orientation to this, you know, why isn't he there to support? Because Aaron knows he's not Moshe. But by the way, that's the greatness of Aaron. Aaron knows he's not Moshe. Of course, now you can go back to the conversation between Miriam and Aaron and what place and who speaks and what's said over there, but it seems to be that Aaron has a clearer understanding. But now you realize that by the way that Chazal finished with this, we have in this particular parsha, we have Moshe's whole family are involved in this, in terms of the two brothers we never heard about, in terms of his wife is over here, in terms of his father-in-law over here, in terms of his brother, in terms of his sister. His whole family is in this week's parsha. So it's interesting, it's al iske mishpachoteim, it's all about family. Yeah, it's all about family in terms of they're complaining about rules, but it's also all about Moshe's family as well. So I'm saying there's so many levels and so many textures to this particular parsha, but I think that this image in terms of the flowing of prophecy is actually the main theme.